Good morning. It's Monday, September 24th, and this is another episode of the Six Ways from Sunday podcast. My name is Ben Wilson. I'm hosting Robin King again this morning for coffee, and we're going to be having another conversation about our faith and exploring another topic of faith that is one that's been on my mind a lot for quite a while, and it's a big one, so buckle up. We might get into the weeds here with some metaphysical and existential questions, but what's been on my mind is what happens to us after we pass away. And I know that's something that most of us either struggle with or at least ponder or wonder about. And so to sit down with our minister here, Robin, and discuss this and explore this big question, I hope you'll enjoy this conversation and have a lot of your own questions that you can bring to this online community that is Six Ways from Sunday and engage with others around the questions that you have. And you can reach us and connect with us through the Six Ways from Sunday Facebook page or website, which is sixwaysfromsunday.ca. But to lead into our conversation this morning, over the last few weeks, we've been talking a lot about creation and a lot about the creation story from the Bible and Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. And one thing that, Robin, you've been saying a lot lately is that in your belief, we come from God and we return to God, and therefore our default setting is good. That this story of original sin from the creation story of Adam and Eve is not so much about our default setting as humans today being, you know, we're born sinful beings and we need redemption from that sin, but rather we're born good, we're born perfect even, in the image of God, and that we have free will. We have the freedom to choose to sin when we do. So if we come from God and we return to God, let's talk this morning about what that means. What does it mean to return to God after this life is over? It's a big question. Where do you want to start?
Well, let's start at the beginning. I believe that we come from God and we return to God, as you say. I believe that we are in this life, we are created of this earth, right? I mean, that's one of the things we talked about last week, was that there's two creation stories, and it's not so much about, you know, the beginning so ever so very long ago. What it's about is how relevant is that today, and what does it mean to us today? And my take on that is, first of all, we're created in the image of God, and secondly, we are created in the image of God, but we are created also from the earth and the water and the air that is what gives us life, right? So we are intimately connected to the great creation around us and to God. Those things together, that's the intimacy of our relationship with those things together. So I believe that we come from God and we return to God. So I believe your question then is, what happens when we die?
Yeah, what does it mean to go home to...
Well, first of all, let me say we don't pass away. This is such a grand question, right? It's such a massively huge question. We've come up with a different, very poetic ways of describing what happens.
Crossing
so
over.
So that you don't have to say you die. Yeah. We say things like fall asleep. We say things like pass over. We say things like pass away, right? Mm-hmm. We have a variety of expressions.
Meet your maker.
Yeah.
Reach your heavenly reward.
Right. We come up with so many different ways of saying it because we're afraid to say you die, as if that's a bad thing. Of course it's a bad thing in the context of like this reality. But that's part of what we're about as people of faith, is understanding that that isn't the only reality, right? The reality also is that when this earthly life is done, here I am being poetic again, right? There is another life far beyond these shores, right? We have such interesting ways of saying it that we go, in other words, what we try to do is we try to give the impression that we go somewhere. Mm-hmm. Right,
and so the
end of the Lord of the Rings, right? That's such an eloquent way of doing that, right? The end of that story, mm-hmm. Tolkien's story, is that they get on a ship and they sail into the West,
right? Yeah,
and they go where exactly? Right? Again, it's a very poetic way of saying when we're done here, we go somewhere else.
I guess the only frame of reference that we can use to try to wrap language around the idea of there being some type of existence after this physical existence is using language and context from this reality. I think that's what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah.
And so how can you possibly do justice to something that is not this by using language and description from what we've come to know in this life?
Sure. My question would be, why would you need to? But that's absolutely, I think you're absolutely right about that, is that, and that's the thing about these stories of people who die and come back, right? They cross over to the other side, he said, being poetic again.
So people and who come are clinically deceased. Yes,
basically people who are clinically dead, physically dead, and we bring them back.
Resuscitate.
We resuscitate them. We resuscitate them. We don't bring them back because they didn't leave.
So is that
but distinction? But that's between... how we try and understand it, is that they left, right, and come back. But what they say is the way they describe that other place, mm-hmm. Invariably uses language that we can understand, which is
bright light,
mind-boggling to me, because how would we possibly understand something that's so completely different that we can't understand it? So we try and explain it with words that we can understand. And don't get me wrong, I'm not suggesting like that. There's that wonderful story that heaven is for real, right? It's the story of the little boy who dies, and they resuscitate him, and he starts talking about the other place, and he uses descriptive language that is highly reminiscent of the same language his dad, who's a pastor, would use in church on a Sunday morning. So some people go, oh, he's just making it up. And I don't think he's making it up at all. I think what he's doing is he's just trying to use language that he knows, right? Because that's what we do. Mm-hmm. We're trying to describe something that is indescribable in this context, using language from this context.
Yeah, he's not going to come back and all of a sudden describe heaven in Spanish or Swahili, because he doesn't have
not even that, because we could translate that. My point would be, you can't translate it, right?
Yeah, I'm just
saying.
Because
it literally doesn't translate.
Yeah.
And so first of all, I think I'm not questioning that there was some kind of an experience that was not of this particular
domain
existence, whatever, however you want to describe it. What I'm suggesting is that it's I'm going to say impossible for us to describe it in any way other than language that would be relevant to this domain, right?
Which is why we use artistic,
which is why we're so creative about it, right? We're so poetic about it, because we don't know what it is, unless of course you darn well do know what happens next, because you either go to heaven or you go to hell. And I can tell you exactly what hell is, and that's where you're going, Ben. Oh, wait, sorry. I got carried away there for a minute.
isn't that so convenient, though?
But yes, isn't that so convenient, especially since there isn't a hell. But it's so convenient that that's kind of the problem with the understanding of we pass away, or we leave, or we cease to exist. Any kind of language that you use like that, because I don't think we do. I think this is simply, this existence is us in a different form, right? And so let me say more about that, because I think that who we are, our essentialness, our soul, if you like, continues to exist as it moves from, this is going to sound really not at all faith-based, but nonetheless, as we move from dimension to dimension, right? So, for example, we come from God. When we are with God, we are who our soul essentially is. We are.
So,
and we come here, and we are still different form, but we are still nonetheless who we essentially are. So I think this is one of the reasons why, for example, earlier today you were talking about how one of your kids sometimes has talked about how they went to a certain place or they did a certain thing with, you know, a long-dead relative who, you know, that kind of thing. And kids do that all the time, I think. I think kids frequently will come out with things like that. And there's two ways you can approach that. One is, oh, you just made that up. Aren't they super creative? Or, yes, they are super creative because we are, but that creativity is connecting with somewhere in some other time, right?
Right.
This is, to me, because this is one of those things where it connects with things like string theory and the idea that, you know, all time coexists at one point in time. You know, all of those
Multiverse theory.
All those theories, right?
Yeah.
Is that even the, what's that, there's a series of books back in the day, back in the 80s, about the, was it the Universal Hero or something like that, where it's the same person who exists in different lifetimes, right?
Oh, I see.
And passes through different, but it's the same, essentially the same soul. And see, I think we come from God, we return to God. I think that's why. It's because we're essentially the same soul. Will you recognize that when you're with God? Maybe not. I don't know.
So for you, it doesn't feel like that matters then? That's enough?
For me, what doesn't matter?
That we don't have any clue what that's going to be like.
It's enough. You mean, do I need to know what happens next in terms of where am I going to be?
Well, that or just more what the experience will be like, or whether you'll be consciously aware that you were who you were while you're here.
No, actually, I'm fine with that. I think I'm fine with. Here's the thing. I think there's a point at which you can't. There's a point at which one cannot say all of the things that the church says and maintain any level of consistency. because we say things like, we'll say things like God's love and forgiveness are for all. God forgives, right? God's grace is for everyone. And then we'll say things like, these people are going to heaven, these people are going to hell. Wait a minute, you just said God's grace is for everyone. Oh, and by the way, you also said that God is one who judges that, not us.
Yeah.
So how do I get to tell you you're going to hell, but I can save you? I don't get to say that. I shouldn't get to say that. More significantly, how do we say things like God's forgiveness is for everyone, and then say, but some people don't return to God, right? And in fact, there are places in the Bible where Jesus actually implies, but I think says, right, sheep and goats.
Right.
But see, I think some of those things are framed that way because of the context in which it's being said to the people it's being said.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we come from God, return to God. God's love and forgiveness is for all. I don't see any inconsistencies yet. Wait a minute. So are you saying that people like Hitler go to heaven? Well, you know what? If you're going to say it that way, yes, actually. Mm. In the sense that everyone returns to God. The most evil person you can imagine in this existence, are you saying that person goes to God? Yes, I am. Yes, I do think that's true. Will we recognize that person with God? No. Because the only thing that we could possibly recognize is the thing that we don't know, which is the intimacy of that person's true soul and self, right? There are people who have this idea that when we're with God, we choose our path in this world, right? And we are simply traveling the path we have chosen. And that of course, then gets the question, so you think somebody who's truly evil in this lifetime chooses that path before they come.
Yeah, that's hard.
And that's hard too. I don't know that I would say that. I think that what pushes people down those kind of paths is the experience they have once they get here. Because I think whatever path you choose before you come here is your path and your path alone. But that doesn't mean it's not going to be impacted by every other single path that you cross, right?
Right.
And those other paths are the things that, and this is where we get back to the idea that we're inherently good, and that understanding sin as the thing that moves us away from God, we're inherently good, but the experiences we have in this life are the things that lead us, or not lead us, move us, onto other paths and in other directions that might turn us away from God, right? That doesn't mean that at the end of this life we're not going to come back to God. I just think, and that's why I'm kind of okay with the idea that I don't know what heaven looks like. I don't know. I used to actually, people used to, I had a joke once that when people would ask me what I thought hell was like, I used to say Cleveland. I've never been to Cleveland. I have no idea. I just like made it up, and so I'm sorry to people from Cleveland. But then I started saying Calgary, which I have actually been to. But again, I'm sorry, it was just a joke. Because I think it's ridiculous to try and speculate as to what it is like.
Yeah.
By the same token, I think we can't also then speculate like, when I get to heaven, I would really like to meet, Martin Luther King Jr.
Right.
Please.
But a lot of people do believe that you will be...
I'm not saying you won't.
Yeah. No,
I'm not saying you won't. I'm not saying you won't also meet Hitler. But I'm also not saying that you would necessarily recognize it. I don't know is the thing. I do have this idea that that with God, the thing about being with God is every soul is its truest form.
Yeah.
When it's with God. And that our truest form being inherently good, but our truest form also being uniquely individual to who we are, there's a variety of that, right? So already there's a variety of good, for instance, right? Mm-hmm. But I also don't think it doesn't hurt us to imagine. I mean, our whole our creativity, right? Imagination. That's one of the great things about like kids being able to say things like that is that on the one hand you want to say, oh, you're just making that up, isn't that wonderful, you're so creative, could also be that they're in touch with something else. Mm-hmm. Right, because they're new here, right? We have not formed them yet.
Yeah,
right. Because that is what we do. We have structures and ways of doing things and everything in this world that form people, their experiences that form people. However, how people ever get to be so incredibly creative and imaginative, sometimes I it's amazing to me because we try so hard to stop them. But people do, and I wish more people did, because it's like saying everyone's creative, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're not just talking about art, right? We're talking about the idea that people create every... We each of us, every single person creates every moment.
We do.
And just by being, right?
Yeah.
And we create things. We, you know, even the simplest things. We don't need to be great, phenomenal artists who create massive works of art that everyone can see to realize that in every moment we are creating something that we can see. Right.
And we're also just creating in our heads. We are constantly creating a story or meaning about what we're perceiving, how we're interpreting that. We create that. So right. One thing I wanted to come back to is when you talked about young children just a few days ago. My kids were asking about heaven. I don't remember how we got onto the topic, but we were eating lunch or breakfast or something, and I think one of the girls was saying, will there be food in heaven? And I'm pretty sure I just said, I have no idea. And then Grayson said, do you poop and pee in heaven? And I said, I don't think so, buddy. But that was his number one question.
You would get really constipated and have all sorts of health issues if you didn't, Ben. I mean, come on.
But, or you would just have perfect health and...
Well, and that's the thing where, and I know I keep saying, I've said this a number of times, right? That famous Edmund Spencer poem that ends with the line about heaven being endless perfectness. Mm-hmm. It's not the idea of what we might think of as perfect so much as you wouldn't have to worry about any of those things, like any of the things in this life we worry about, which, by the way, Jesus frequently reminds us not to worry about. But all of the things that we worry about in this life, you don't have to worry about, is what mm-hmm. I think. Again, I don't know. But I think, and it's like people who say, well, will I see so-and-so or I see my relatives, right? Mm-hmm. I'll be glad to be with, or, you know, now dad's with mom, or, you know, those kind of things. Yes, I think that's absolutely true. I think it's absolutely true. And the thing is that I think particularly souls that have a relationship in this life will know that relationship in the other life. But
it's just not the same as a physical.
It won't be the same. Right. Yeah.
So one analogy that popped into my head as you were on a roll there for a bit was that if maybe one way of visualizing that our soul energy or our higher true self, I've heard it described as well, that maybe that returning to God experience is more like, it's less like, you know, getting on the ship and crossing over to a distant shore. And it's more like you're this cup of water and you're being poured back into the ocean that is God's love. And that you, mm-hmm. so you lose, there's like a dissolving or a dissolution of the self that we think of as self. It brings up
right.
another big question, which is this, you know, who am I? What does it mean to be Robin? What does it mean to be Ben? Like, those are just names that our parents gave us. And you're obviously not your body. Like, you could lose.
Thank goodness. Yeah. I could lose a few pounds. That's where
you're
going, Ben.
I was
going to
say, you could lose an arm or a leg and you'd still be you. You're obviously not the same you that you were when you were a newborn infant. There isn't even a
not
single...
Not physically, but...
No, there isn't a single cell in your body that... That's what I'm saying. It's physically not the same. So then who... It's this that deep question of who is the you that is asking the question, who am I?
Yeah.
It's that kind of subconscious observer to the self. So if the body ends its time here and goes back to being of the earth... And also, as a side note, I was just talking with someone about the bacteria that are in our guts, like that biome that are in our mm-hmm. digestive system, and how important all of that is. And they were saying, did you know that there are more bacterial cells in the human body than human cells? And I had heard that before. But we got talking about how, like, if you want to talk about the physical you, you're actually more less human and more bacteria than you are human. You're walking bacteria.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you.
That's not you personally.
That's
but all
thank
of us.
You so much.
We're all like a micro climate or like village of microorganisms than this one walking, talking, thinking human organism.
Right. Right.
So all of that so those bacteria will live on and they'll reproduce and long after you and I are gone, and our cells and the atoms that make up our cells are going to continue to exist for.
Well, and we're all stardust anyway, right?
Exactly. So it's not that we're talking about, but that deeper self that is not even the thinking, not even that voice in your head that's thinking, oh, I'm kind of hungry. It's how long is it before lunch? Like that inner monologue that's always talking in the back of our head. Maybe that's not who we truly are either. If there's a higher self that is just that awareness that we exist in the first place, if that's the self that continues to exist and lives on.
Sure. Yeah. So you're kind of getting into an area that I don't always, I'm not really always very comfortable about, because it makes people mad when I say it. But the thing is, you know, for people who spend an inordinate amount of time seeking a higher level of consciousness, or I forget some of the language we use around that, right? You're looking
transcendence,
yeah, all of that kind of stuff.
Self-actualization.
Good on you, good for you. But if you're not using that as a means to relate to the world around you, I feel sorry for you.
Yeah.
Because you're missing out, is the thing. I think, and that's the thing. I think because we come from God and return from God, God wants us to enjoy this life. I don't think that, and when I say God, of course, again, let me just remind that I say God, and what I mean is, love, I mean the energy of creation and the universe, I mean the web of life, the higher power, the all of that language that we might use, I roll that all into one thing, and that's God for me. But we have this life to enjoy it. We need to experience it. We need to engage it. We need to interact with it. Does some of that lead us away from God and lead us to what we call sin, right? Because it leads us away from God. Yes, it does. But we shouldn't be afraid of that. We should always be seeking, obviously, for good. But we're here to enjoy this. Why would you spend all of your time trying to escape it? Mm-hmm. And I'm not suggesting that that's a bad thing, as long as you're using it as a way of perhaps balancing what your engagement with the world around you and everything. It's just that, again, why would you be trying to escape it? Why would you not want to be engaging it? The creation around you is a wonderful and amazing mm-hmm. thing.
But transcendence, unless, of course, or, you know, striving for that nirvana state, in my mind, isn't about escaping the physical plane or, a detachment. Although they talk, you know, a lot of these thinkers and teachers will talk about detachment and dissolving of the ego, becoming.
It's to help you with this plane of existence, right?
It's to strive to resonate at your highest level possible.
This existence.
Exactly.
And then but when people start talking about it as a way of escaping, I'm not fine with that. Because once again, that just sounds kind of like, how people often understand Paul in the epistles, right? Especially the ones that we're pretty sure weren't written by Paul. Which is that... you should strive for a spiritual life and avoid, like, it's various, very, like, don't engage the world around you. This is all sinfulness. This is all bad.
Don't engage in earthly thinking and
no
wishes.
No sex, no drinking, no, none of the good stuff, right? Don't do any of that, because you're not supposed to. You're supposed to strive to be closer to God. I strive to be closer to God in my engagement of the world, not in my avoidance of it, and I think that's a really important piece. The other thing is that unless of course, and see, to me this is an oxymoron, but for people who say this life is a living hell, right? Like this is hell, because this is as far away we can get from God. Okay, fine, but the moment you start talking about it being a living hell, no, you don't get that. Sorry. Because hell isn't about life; it's about the opposite. God is life-giving. Creation is life-giving. Hell is not. If there's one thing about how we would one way that I would describe hell, it's the exact opposite of what we understand to be life-giving. I would understand hell as not just as far away from God as possible, but as far away from God as possible because it's not life-giving. So you don't get to say this is a living hell, because it's not. Hell isn't about living. This life is about living, and then if we engage it and we understand it as this amazing and wonderful thing, yes, it's a trial sometimes, sure, yes, it is, absolutely, but if we engage it and live in it positively, if we understand that we're here for a reason, right, which is to engage the world around us, why wouldn't you do that?
I think no matter what you believe happens next, almost everyone can agree that it's a miracle that we're here at all, and that all we can do is make the most of this limited, unknown amount of time. I heard somewhere that almost all mammals have a finite number of heartbeats, that their heart will function for, on average, about a billion beats. And so smaller mammals, their heart beats a lot faster and their lifespan is shorter, but that it actually, the math works out that, you know, a weasel or a raccoon or whatever smaller mammal that has a shorter lifespan because of its faster heart rate will have about roughly a similar number of heartbeats to a human, to an elephant, and everywhere in between. And it's spooky to think about ourselves having a best before date and knowing that we're here for only a short, relatively very short and a very finite period of time. But no matter what your metaphysical or spiritual or religious beliefs are, it's precious, that mm-hmm. finite amount of time.
Absolutely. And of course you haven't included it in our conversation here. We haven't included the significant variables, right? Which is things like people who are not healthy, right? Or mm-hmm. people have like mental illnesses that are physiologically based, right? They're not experiential. They're actually, we have physiological issues. Or the fact that you could get hit by a car.
Exactly.
You know, those kind of random things as well. Our conversation has not taken into consideration any of that. But taking into consideration that as well points even more strongly to what you just said, which is life is precious and we should want to live every moment of it.
Yeah, that's a good place to leave it, acknowledging that we have not concluded any or come to any actual answers to these big questions. But like you said, it's really life is about just engaging one another and engaging these ideas and the world yeah. around us. And so I hope that these series of conversations together, and with our intention is to have some yeah. other guests come on this show too and really hear some diverse perspectives on a lot of these yeah. topics.
I'd just like to throw in, by the way, just before we leave that, because sure. what you just said, you're absolutely right. We probably haven't come up with any answers. What we might have come to, though, is a little bit more understanding. And see, I think sometimes we focus way too much on, especially in churches, where, you know, especially churches that say, you have questions, we have answers. I would avoid places like that. Because I think we all have questions, and asking those questions together helps us be more understanding and come to a greater understanding, but it might not necessarily answer a specific question.
Yeah.
It might just help us understand it better. And I think that's the important piece. It. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like yeah. My understanding around these big questions, even just from this conversation, has been deepened or furthered. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.
Yeah. I hope that everyone listening has enjoyed it as well. And thanks for joining us today. And hopefully we'll have you join us again in the future. We post a new episode in this series once a week, and you can find those at risingspiritministry.com. And we're also in the process of getting all of these episodes up onto iTunes. I think we're on Spotify now as well. So wherever you look for podcasts, search 6 Ways from Sunday and leave a rating, leave a comment, share these with your friends, and help us to continue growing this online community of people interested in exploring how we love, think, and act in the world. And in the meantime, continue to spread joy and be love.